Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, now you should be hearing some audio.
Check, 1, 2.
Hold on. Okay.
Check. Oh, yeah. Crisp.
Like we're in a studio. All right, so go ahead.
Check. Talk. Yap. That's good.
Okay, Rob.
Check. Crisp. Chip.
Popcorn.
Crisp chips.
Potato. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Good. Yes.
This is your announcer, Chuck Landington, welcoming you to the Metal Injection Livecast. Dave from Revocation is sitting in on the show tonight to play Death or No Death. I haven't been this excited since Rob set me up on a date with the drum machine Metallica used on Master of Puppets. Just kidding, I've never been excited. And now, here is the Metal Injection Livecast.
Shocking!
Also, just kidding, a drum machine would sound much better than that.
True.
And with that,
allegedly,
welcome to the 475th edition of the Metal Injection Livecast.
Yeah.
And a very special edition because we have a very special guest, Dave Davidson of Revocation.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me. Oh, the applause. Wow.
Yeah.
Thank you.
They're in the back. Can't
see Bruno's doing it all on his own.
All right. Stop. Cut it out. We get it.
Everyone is very excited to see Dave. Of course, you're promoting your new album, The Outer Ones. It's out September 27th. Metal Blade Records.
28th, I think. Yeah.
It'll also be out the 28th.
Yeah, it will be. Yeah.
I mean, by then it'll be out for sure.
Definitely the 28th. We know that.
Yeah, I can't wait.
And thank you for sitting in. You're going to be hanging out with us here. We're going to be playing Death or No Death, the best game show in heavy metal history, where you decide which band names are real or which ones are not real. And,
are you familiar with this game? Have you heard about it?
I've heard about it.
You're going to dive right in.
I'm excited to test my metal knowledge.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
No pressure.
And we should introduce ourselves. I'm Rob, here with Noah, Sid, and Darren.
That's me. We don't get names?
No, I didn't. I'm very unprepared. I usually come up with alliterations for them, but not this week.
Not this time.
Rob's in a food coma. He can't.
I purposely had a small lunch because I knew we'd be snacking because we had to step up our snack games. I had just a tuna wrap. No side.
Mayo?
Well, there's mayo in the tuna. Sure.
Yeah, all right. Any other?
There were some veggies.
Did you make this at home, or did you go to some, like, shit-ass deli for this?
I went to a nice-ass deli for it, not a shit-ass one. Mm. It's like one of those, like, frou-frou, like, we're healthy, so we charge $2 more. One of those.
Oh, so I slept over Rob's house.
Really?
Big reveal.
Spoiler, I wasn't there.
Rob has some really nice restaurants around his apartment.
Oh, yeah.
Nice little bagel shop that all the cops were at in the morning.
Get any phone numbers?
No. I'm too cranky in the morning. I can't deal with that.
Well, they're cops. They could just, you know, make you.
Oh, what?
They're cops. They have guns. I don't know if you heard.
No, I'm a white woman. They won't make me do anything.
Jeez. All right. Fair enough.
Noah was house sitting for me because I was upstate at the wedding. She was watching my baby Babka.
Why didn't she just take Babka to her apartment?
Just like the logistics of Rob getting home and stuff, it was easier just to stay at his house. Mm-hmm. And also, I just wanted to try out his apartment. Mm.
Really, she wanted to use my washer dryer. I'm very privileged to have a washer dryer in my apartment.
Damn.
Yeah, that's
in
a hot
New York City.
Yeah, it's a hot commodity in Brooklyn.
It's very nice. I don't deserve it.
Unfortunately, it's like 3 square feet of space outside the washer dryer. So it's just, you just, the whole apartment is washer dryer.
Yeah, it really takes up the majority of my apartment.
You got to climb over it to get to the refrigerator.
It's like one. My loft bed is on top of the dryer.
It lowers down from the floor.
And so you can be a part of the show as well, I shall mention. All you got to do. We're live. If you're listening live, 213-943-3688. That's the phone number. If you want to remember it quick, it's easy. 213-WIDENUT.
WIDENUT.
That's the phone number.
We have to tell all our guests we did not plan that out.
We reverse engineered it.
Yes, we figured it out from the numbers.
Bad medical condition to have.
Not for Rob. Yeah, he loves that.
I'm more of a long nut than a wide nut.
He's trying to. Well, it depends on what angle you're
at. Yeah,
it
depends on where you're looking.
That would be your Game of Thrones character.
Long nut?
Lord Long Nut.
Lord Long Nut.
Fake.
No, it's pretty real. Previously on the show, I've discussed how I enjoy a nice stretch of the balls in my private life.
Like, you like someone just to pull on your balls.
I think he does it to himself.
Or you do it yourself.
Yeah. Well,
either or. Okay.
Oh, that was not discussed. I think we're breaking new ground here. Was it? Was it discussed? Of course you discussed you doing it to yourself.
Yeah, I think we discussed Rob doing it, but we haven't discussed it being done on you.
Can I ask, Darren, when you say discussed, which spelling?
Well,
both could apply.
I meant discussed as in talking about it, but you make a solid, fair point there. They both could have.
Sure.
No, I'm just. I don't want to kink shame you, Rob. That's not my cup of tea. But
thank you.
Was
2018. Yes, we're very sex positive here on the line.
Hey,
yes. There's no.
You like your balls being pulled. Some people like getting kicked in the balls. You know.
Yeah, that's. I don't like that.
No.
I like it.
I'm not gonna.
Yeah. Some
do you
people
know for a fact that you don't like it? Have you been kicked in the balls?
Let's try it now.
I mean, I've been kicked in the balls outside of the bedroom.
Not in a sexual context.
Yeah.
Maybe the sexual context would make you like it.
Maybe if you stretch them out long enough, it'll be a numbing sensation, so you won't even feel it.
No. If things get a little too aggressive, that's what I call timeout.
I thought you were going to say, like, if you
that's
make
your
them
safe word, Robert.
I thought you were going to say if you make them long enough, like a car might run over them or something.
That's
and
how you
just
get them long
it'll
enough.
Happen organically.
The finish line.
Oh, my God.
Rocking chairs are a big problem.
Pants. Pants in general.
But enough about Rob's balls.
Yeah.
What do you like done to your balls?
Oh, yeah.
I'm just a regular old.
You're a traditional.
Yeah, traditional.
Like a lick? Do you like a lick?
Sure.
We're
know,
very friendly to our guests. This
fine.
Is just second hour this year deciding what you get.
Comfortable.
Rob's going to make you feel right at home.
I'm not saying any of us would lick your ball. No, I'm
thank
just curious.
Thank you for clearing that up. Fuck's sake.
Unless you win Death or No Doubt.
That is the prize. The loser licks the balls of the winner.
I'm glad I'm the host. It's weird when Noah wins.
What?
Bruno has a happy night.
Bruno sadly has no ball.
No.
Ball.
Whoa. Ooh, that thunder came across on the air. Yeah.
It's
really about to pour here.
The weather is pretty intense outside.
I just got inside right before.
We're nice and safe here on the Metal Injection Lab. Yeah.
It's like there should be like some candles going. We could like do a seance right now or something with the thunder and lightning in the background.
I like it.
Have some sage to burn.
Yeah. Ghost just spells out balls and then ha ha ha.
Stretch them.
Would Rob like getting kicked in the balls? It just goes to Y. Yeah.
And then you find out it's Rob's hand guiding it towards the
Come on, guys.
We can channel the spirit of your dignity.
Gives a whole new meaning to the light as a feather, stiff as a board.
Wow, it just keeps going, Rob.
As does my ball.
Oh.
But anyway, so the outer ones. I want to say I'm very impressed. You know, you guys have been around now You guys have been putting out albums now for a decade, over a decade? Has it been over a decade?
Yeah, man. I think it's been a decade now.
Yeah, and like you've put out
longer, yeah, because we started in 2006 with that first demo or whatever, and when Empire of the Obscene came out, I think that was 08, I want to say.
Yeah. So there we go. Yeah. So, and it's been like almost you've been like on a near 2 year cycle with your music.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like it never stops. It's sort of like we released the record, we tour a bunch, and then as soon as that touring cycle dies down, like we're already back in the studio recording.
Do you feel pressure to put something out every 2 years, or is that just when it happens naturally?
Yeah, it's really no pressure. We've had the material every time, so it's like if I've got music written, I don't want to just like sit on it for the sake of like sitting on it. Like I've said this in interviews before, but like
you could say it here.
It's not like if we leave the studio and like the very next day, like I write a riff, I'm going to like catalog it. And if I'm feeling it, you know, like I don't want to think like, oh, well, I just did a record. Like I don't want to think about writing. Like inspiration is when it comes knocking, I want to make sure that I'm there to kind of tap into that rather than just like, oh, I just recorded a record, screw this. Like, I'm not going to think about writing because you never know when.
You enjoy writing.
I enjoy writing, yeah. It's fun for me. It's like trying to solve some, like, weird puzzle when you have, like, a bunch of riffs that, like, fit together, but you're not exactly sure, like, how they all work. You just know they work well with one another, so.
Yeah, because I have to say, I'm very impressed with how prolific you are with the riffage because, you know, your songs are not simple. Whoa.
Oh, my God.
We might not make it out of here.
They're not simple songs, you know, they're not like just like a few power chords. And so to write all of that music, it can't be easy.
It's difficult. Yeah. And I kind of obsess over it, but for me, it's fun. Like I said, like I don't mind spending like hours and hours of my time working on these songs because it's just like, I don't know. I can't get them out of my head. Like once I'm working on something, it's like, I need to solve the puzzle. It's like this weird, like Rubik's cube. So like, a lot of my writing sometimes just gets done like in my head without even having a guitar. Like as far as like structuring things goes, like I'll just have like riffs in my head and I'll just be like kind of pacing back and forth like in my room. Like, okay, then this can go here. Okay, what if I did this drum beat over that? Like just kind of imagining the song structure. And then like when it feels good to me up here and internally, I'm like, all right, now like I'll record like a little demo and like then I'll listen back to it, or even like record the demo and not listen to it for a day and then listen to it and see how it flows. Sometimes you have to take a step back sometimes, obviously, but
so how do you get like do you get feedback from the other guys, like when do they come into the picture?
So usually what I do is I write the song when we're hanging out, and if I've got like a riff like on my computer or something like that, I'll play it for the dudes, like even though it's like not near like completion or just this one lone riff on its own, just to kind of like be like, hey, what do you guys think of this? And generally the feedback's good, which also can be inspiring. Like, all right, cool. Yeah. Dudes like it. I'm on the right track with this, but usually what I'll do is I'll kind of write the song, try to flesh it out like as much as possible. That way, when I bring it to the table, it's not this thing that's going to get like picked apart and like, you know, critiqued. Mm-hmm. I can have it like in my mind already of like, all right, like, and then if they don't like it or the structure, like we can kind of come back. But I found like when you bring something, then it's like kind of like half baked, like you know where it's going to go in your head, but like other people don't see it yet. It's, so it's like,
it's hard writing music.
Yeah.
And especially like when you're working with a couple of other people, I think it's a really like unique skill to have. I mean, as someone who has studied music and everything, like I really understand how difficult it is to have something in your head and then you have to put it through an instrument. And then you kind of build this idea and you work with other people. It's not easy.
Right. Right. And sometimes an idea that you think is sick, like other members of your band might not like, and we run things democratically. So it's like, if something gets outvoted, it gets outvoted. You can try to make a case for it. It happens not often. Right. Mm-hmm. I think generally we're all pretty much on the same page, which is nice. Like I've heard stories about different bands where it's like, you know, one guy writes the music and then like everyone feels like they need to like throw their hat in the ring and like be like, oh, let's change this, like even just like changing certain notes around. And like luckily I think, like I said, we're all on the same page, so there's not too many cooks in the kitchen. It's more like, okay, the idea is good, like let's just like go with that. It's the same way when Dan writes his songs, like I might have like a suggestion here or there about like structure, or like, oh, what if we took this riff and actually made it like the intro, or just little things. But like I have faith in him as a musician, and his vision for the songs that, like, I don't really want to, like, comment too much, like, while he's working things out until it's, like, pretty much fleshed out. And then I'll add my two cents because, like, things change and, like, I'll come in with, like, riffs and scrap them months later, like, after the fact. So I primarily just sort of work with the drummer, Ash, for that reason, because, like, I might have an inkling that something's going to change down the line, but, like, you know, let's go with this for now and then just sort of see where it goes and develops. Like, this last record had by far the most revisions that we've ever done, just because, I don't know, I wanted to refine the songs and make them as best as they could be.
Yeah.
So I was going to say, like, when you're finished with a song, do you ever want to, like, go back later, or do you just step away from it, or how does that work?
Yeah, in the writing process, I'm definitely down to always come back to it and listen to it and refine it. Sometimes you just get lucky and it just works out and it's like, oh, cool. Like, I wouldn't do anything to change this, like, right out the gate, and it just flows perfectly. But almost, you know, every time there's maybe something that can get refined from when we first start working on it. Even sometimes if you just get, like, bored, like, oh, like, you know, this part doesn't need to happen again in the song. Like, maybe when I first wrote it, I was really excited about the riff and you want to put it in a bunch of different places and you're like, all right, this is kind of overkill here, we don't need to come back to the riff like a fourth time or whatever. So
Do you ever get like 5 years away from the record and listen to it and just like, wow, I wish I had done something else differently, or is that just unproductive, like, thinking?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's like I look at them more like as like snapshots of like where I was at, like, in a particular like period of time. So there's songs on maybe Chaos of Forms or Existence is Futile that, like, I wouldn't write today. But at the same time, like, I don't know, like, I've had people come up and be like, oh, this is my favorite song off the record. And it's like, oh, cool, that's like my least favorite song on the record. I wouldn't, like, you know, write that song again. We have no intentions of playing it live, but, like, that's sick that it resonated with you. And, like, you know, I appreciate that. And, I, you know, it's one of those things where it's a cool little chronological, like, you can kind of look back and be like, oh, yeah, it's like a little time machine of, like, where I was at as a musician and what I was listening to and all that kind of stuff. Plus, you have to go through certain growing pains and, like, get the music out in order to, like, make room for new ideas, right? Like, if I was just, like, holding on to that and, like, trying to make it work, like, maybe I would, like, come back to it in different ways and it would need to come out in some way or form anyway.
Yeah, I think people get hung up on it, on their stuff wanting their stuff to sound perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And it's exactly like you said, like, you've got to just let go so that new ideas come in.
Right. Right.
Have you ever brought anything to the table that, like, maybe the guys found too challenging, or, like, vice versa? Like, have you ever had a riff that you couldn't quite play? What do you do in that case?
Yeah, there's some, I mean, luckily everyone in the band is, like, a really great player, so don't really run into that too often. There's certain riffs on songs. Like, I remember the intro riff, like, Reprogrammed. When Dan heard it, he was like, there's no way I'm going to be able to, like, play that live. But, I mean, Dan can play it. It's just, like, I think sometimes you hear stuff and it sounds crazy and intimidating. But then, like, you're also thinking about, like, a particular fretting pattern or picking pattern, and I might be doing something different. Like, oh, no, like, play it like this. And all of a sudden it's like, oh, yeah, that actually makes it, like, a bit easier. Or, like, things with Ash. Like, we've had really complex sort of syncopated rhythms and, like, drum parts where, like, he was hearing just, like, the downbeat of, like, a different part of the beat. So it's not that he couldn't play the things, but it's just he was feeling it, like, in a fundamentally different way than I was feeling it, because I was on the last record trying to do some tricky things as far as, like, starting riffs on, like, upbeats, like, ands of four and this and that, just to kind of throw the listener off. And then, like, when the groove kicks in, it's like, oh, weird. Like, I was hearing it, like, backwards. So he was certain parts hearing, like, the beat, like, totally flipped around. Like, he would, like, send me demos back, and I had to be like, no, this is the one. Like, you count it like this, which is sometimes hard to do when you're trying to, like, you know, speak drums to someone else. Like, I don't have any skills behind the kit, but I can, like, describe what I want. That's what I do.
The Bob Rock thing.
That's what I do, yeah. I've been told I can speak drums well. But when you're feeling something different, it's like hard to, like, get it out of your head. Like, even, like, classic records sometimes, like, if you hear, like Megadeth, like, Holy Wars, like, when that first riff comes in, like, you can hear it, like, you know, deadlin deadlin, like, all in the downbeat, or you can hear it like deadlin 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 deadlin, like, depending on how you hear it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know the riff I'm talking about, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So, like, you hear it like diddling, 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 diddling. I think that's how most people hear it, but I think it's meant to be heard. Diddling, 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 diddling. But like, there's no count in for it, so you don't really know.
Yeah, I play a second of it here, so I can illustrate them. So you can hear it both ways there.
Right, you know what I mean? You can hear it like diddling, 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 or like on the downbeat. So neither one is right nor wrong. It's just like how you're internally feeling it. But when you're doing something with like a beat involved, that's when it like obviously matters, because if you're hearing something on the downbeat versus an upbeat, the whole thing is going to sound fucking flipped around. So it's tricky. But like as far as like technical standpoint, we've never like – it's just a matter of like practicing it. And we're all really good at – just making the time to work on these songs, like before tour, like it's not like we're living all in the same place. So we got to rehearse for maybe like 3 or 4 days before a tour, but that doesn't mean like that's the first time we're working on those songs. Like we're probably working on them for like a month leading up to that, all in our own separate, you know.
So you guys kind of pick out like 20 songs or whatever to work on, or?
No, not even that. I mean, for me, it's like, I'd rather just pick the set and work on that, like, rather than be like, cause it's just a lot of work at the end of the day. Like, we're like, oh, let's do, you know, let's say we're going to do 20 and mill it down to 10. It's like, fuck, I just worked on like 10 songs of like pretty challenging material, like, you know, for no reason than if like we end up choosing a bunch of different ones. So I'd rather just like have that group text thread where like, okay, let's choose the songs. Like everyone throw their hat in the ring and things change. It's like, I might have a list and like maybe people will agree with like 75%, but it's like, oh, let's throw this one in. And it's like, all right, we'll swap out this for that. And that's essentially how we pick our sets. So we can maximize the amount of time that we're spending on the songs that we're actually going to be playing.
Right.
Live.
And getting them right.
Yeah.
Makes sense. Makes sense. I like it.
I love like learning about like the inner workings of bands, because you never really hear about like all this like preparation and work that goes into it. You hear about the album, you hear about the writing process and blah, blah, blah. You see the band perform, you hear about them on tour, but you don't really learn about like the dynamics and you know, like all the work and maintenance.
Yeah, what else goes on in these group texts?
Yeah, it's, you know, mainly
chatting about.
Yeah. Ball.
Just give Rob your phone.
Ball torture.
One of us.
I'm sure Brett would be down.
Oh, yeah. He's
always got his balls out.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. I've seen his balls more than my own probably at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Any post-duty toilet pics sent to each other? Friends that send me those, unfortunately.
Yeah, I'm never stoked on those when I get those texts, you know, or like the...
I can't even think of the mindset to want to send somebody that.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, I get it. Like, that is gross. Like,
well, look, I've had shits where I've been so impressed that I've been like, oh, I got to take a photo of this. But then that's it. That's where it ends. I stop.
Right.
I don't take a photo.
Right.
I just flush it.
Save it for posterity.
No, it doesn't need to be saved.
I've called my wife in to like look at it to see if anything's wrong with it or just to show off.
Oh, my God.
But that's never, about it. Yeah. I've never like
that's
sent them out.
Right,
just
yeah.
showed off like, you got to see this one.
I do. And she goes, no, I don't. Come on. And then she comes in.
And then she's like, wow, you were right. I had to see that one.
She's like, she does say wow. Not always. It's usually the smell more than the.
Do you ever get a high five?
No, she's not really a high five person.
Even for like a really impressive log.
If I put my hand up for a high five for a good log, I think she'd
try
hit it.
That next
she'd
time.
Hit it, but it would never be. It would never generate from her.
I want to see how that goes. Try that next time and report back.
I will. All right.
Thank you.
You got my word.
No, she listens to the show, so now she'll see it coming. It won't
That's
be a
true
surprise.
Too. We'll edit it out. She didn't listen live.
Noah, mark that and edit that out.
It's done. Edited.
Awesome.
Just like that.
You're good.
Well, another thing you did recently that I thought was pretty cool is you guessed it on Marty Friedman's record, and you guys are like buds.
Yeah. It was a real honor to be a part of Inferno, just working with such a legendary guitar player.
Like Megadeth is like one of your jams.
Yeah, I was just talking about him, you know?
Yeah.
That was your reference.
That was
right
my reference, yeah.
Yeah.
No, yeah, it was cool, like, how it all came about. He had a record that came out, like, you know, maybe like a year or two before the one that I worked on with him with. And I guess, like, Prosthetic Records reached out to, like, they wanted, like, quotes, basically, from different people saying, like, oh, Marty rules, you know? So I was like, hell yeah, Marty does rule. And then maybe they put it on like the packaging or something like that, or like, you know, use it in an interview or whatever. So I guess I was on his radar maybe either before that or after that. And yeah, like a little while later, they hit me up to like be like, hey, do you want to like write a song with Marty for his new record? I was like, fuck yeah, I do. That's amazing. He's like one of my biggest influences. And it was cool. I mean, he lives in Japan, so just a lot of back and forth via email, but it was kind of a similar way that I write. It was just, I wrote a bunch of riffs, put them in kind of an order, sent them over to him. And because it was his solo project, he had maybe more to say about the structure and stuff like that.
Oh, but you wrote the core of the song.
I wrote all the riffs in the song. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah. He did the solos, but I did all the music. And like I said, he arranged some of it, or a good amount of it, just to kind of like his musical mind is different than mine, right? And it's his solo record, so I think where I was feeling things, he was like, oh, let's make that an intro or whatever. But it was really cool, and he even allowed me to do vocals on it. I wasn't suggesting that, but he's like, oh, I'm kind of hearing like vocals, and I'm like, all right, well, my style is definitely more. He's like, yeah, no, I know, do your thing. Like, it would be cool if you had like a singing like chorus sort of thing. Because I sing sometimes in Revocation, yeah. And yeah, but it was, I got to write the lyrics, and he didn't really micromanage like anything. He just kind of let me have like free reign to do what I wanted, which was so awesome. Because you never know when you're working with like such a legendary guy, like what they're gonna say about certain things. And it was a really awesome collaboration. And his solos, like I remember like getting the song back, because like I just recorded my parts, and obviously none of his solos were laid down.
Yeah.
And I got it back, and I was like, almost get like teary eyed, like listening to like, wow, like Marty Friedman is soloing over like a riff that I wrote. Like, this is like so surreal and crazy. And he lays down multiple solos in the song. So I'm like, oh, he soloed there too. Like, that's so sick.
Yeah. That's so cool that, he's like interacting with something that you burst.
Yeah. And we were never in a room together once for that, the whole process. It was crazy with technology. So like,
yeah,
he just was able to, we were able to vibe out on the music and just kind of take it from there.
Did you actually talk to him, like communicate verbally, or just through email?
Just through email. Just literally,
yeah,
all
so
through email. And
that's crazy.
I met him in person at NAMM, like really briefly, because he was like with some people like going to an autograph signing or whatever. And I was like, oh, Marty, what's up, man? And kind of exchanged a few words and like, all right, see you later. And then that was the, it was like crazy. And then on Great Is Our Sin, our last record, I had him on one of our songs. We had like, there's a song called The Exaltation, and it's got kind of like maybe a Megadeth-y inspired solo section in it. And I'm like, man, I'm hearing like Marty on this. Like, I wonder if he's like available to do it. And we hit him up, and he was like, totally, like, let's do it. So it was an awesome like collaboration where I got to work with him on his record, and he got to work with us on
That's so awesome. Yeah. I mean, what would 15-year-old Dave Davison think if he was writing pals with Marty Friedman?
I know. I mean, it's 32-year-old Dave still thinks it's cool. So 15-year-old Dave would probably just explode with excitement.
Like, I'm doing what?
Yeah, I know. It's like, my mind would be blown. Like,
have you ever seen this. Marty with Megadeth live?
No. I wish. That would be cool. I've seen this. Oh, there's another Marty thing I forgot. So all that went down, and then like after this was maybe towards like the end of the Great Is Our Sin cycle. He had put out a new record. I forget the name of it right now. It was after the one I worked with him on, something with Sound, I think it's called. Do you remember the new Marty Friedman record? Anyway, he was on tour, and they were playing Boston. And I think I sent him an email like, hey, so you're coming through. Like, it'd be great to hang out, like grab dinner or whatever. So he invited me to the show. We did end up linking up for dinner, but he had me backstage and we were chatting, and he was like, you want to come up and play with us on stage tonight? Like,
oh, wow.
We do like just like a jam, and like not even like play your song, like just come up and rip it. I'm like, sure. Yeah, sure. So like live, like playing with Marty and his band for the first time ever, even after all this like collaboration, we've never actually like jammed in a room together. And yeah, I just got up there, and like me and Marty were just like trading solos like back and forth with one another over like this like slow kind of like bluesy like groove kind of thing. And I'm like,
were you feeling nervous?
Holy shit. Yeah, for sure. I mean, Marty's such a pro, and his phrasing is so great. So I think, maybe I like,
was it easy playing with him just because he is so exceptional? Like,
is he like malleable to like what you're doing?
Well, it was more, it was the band was so great because it's like, you know, when we weren't really playing a ton together, it was kind of like he would take a solo and then I would take a solo, and his band was so tight. But there was one part that we linked up where like this like kind of melody, because there was another guitar player, Jordan, he was also amazing. Like his, it's like Marty's backup player, but he's like fucking incredible. Which you have to be to play in Marty's band. Like,
right.
You know, like every musician was great.
Yeah, and his bassist, she is insane.
Yeah, she's really so good. Really talented, super good stage presence. Anyway, like they brought this melody in, and I kind of linked up and like harmonized it, maybe added my own little thing over the top of it. So like there was a point where we were all like jamming together on like this, I don't know, just weird kind of surreal moment. Like, I can't believe this is happening right now. I'm like locked into a groove with like Marty and like his whole band. This is so sick.
I just realized you're probably like his favorite Dave. You're like at least ahead of two of them. We know that.
Well, at least one.
One? All right, one.
He said some really nice things about me in the press and Revocation in general. I think he said something like Revocation is what I always wanted Megadeth to turn into or something like that.
Oh,
what?
Yeah.
Wow. That what?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
At least I think he said that. I might just be making that up, but I'm pretty sure I heard. Maybe it was in a dream it came to me, but I think he said that.
I mean,
like,
it sounds about right.
Right, you know, and if it's not, don't fact check it. Go with it.
We won't send this clip to Blab around.
What is your favorite Megadeth record?
For me, it's Rust in Peace. I think that's like their pinnacle. The thrash songs are rippers, but there's also like an epic quality. And even from us, I mean, I guess Megadeth has always had interesting song structures, but like, I mean, Hangar 18, for that to be like their biggest hit song, and like, it's pretty much like two verses and then just like a million solos. Like, I don't know, as a guitar player, I just like love it. And it's like just so, it's like so anthemic. And like, they play that song and you're like, oh my God, there's going to be like 2 minutes straight of like awesome, like ripping, trading solos at the end of this like epic thrash song about fucking Area 51.
There's a few songs on that album where it's just they get the lyrics out of the way and then they just jam for like 5 minutes.
It's cool. It, like it almost, yeah, it has like an instrumental thrash. Like it's just kind of proggy, you know, especially for the time. So it's cool that they took those risks and didn't, you know, like, oh, we have to write in a specific way or like has to have follow a traditional like verse, for, you know, pre-chorus, chorus, like hooky kind of thing. I mean, it's catchy for sure.
Yeah.
But it's, I don't know, it was risky, and I think in taking those risks, it just turned into this like super epic sounding thrash record. It's one of my favorite thrash records of all time.
Yeah. So this is the first time that the word risk has been mentioned with Megadeth. It's a positive thing. Amazing.
Did you get into Metallica first and then get into Megadeth?
I got into Pantera was the first band I got into. It was weird. I kind of like, I went from like Aerosmith to Guns N' Roses.
God. Yes. This is like my timeline.
Oh, damn. That's sick.
Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. Aerosmith, GNR. I was just kind of craving like heavier things, like more badass stuff. I actually remember, this is probably a really dumb story, but like, you know, you're a kid, you're like listening to Guns N' Roses, and you're like, Axl Rose is the most badass. Like, he can beat anyone up. Like, kids are like, that's so cool. And then I saw Pantera walk, and I was like, this guy could kick the shit out of Axl Rose. Oh my God. I was like, what? There's someone more tough. Like, it was just such like a mean song. And it's like heavy as hell. Like, I mean, who knows what actually went in a fight, but like in my brain at that time, I was like, wow, this is something else. And then the Dimebag solo came in and I was like, what? I've never seen anyone play guitar like that. I mean, I still love Slash. He had like, you know, this kind of bluesy rock, but that was also like more technical than like a lot of like the rock players and like had his own swagger.
It
looks cool. Looks super badass. But Dime, like he played some shit that like blew my mind. Like that part when he does like the sliding with the tapping and stuff.
God.
And it's just like, he was so fluid and he had this swagger. So like, I totally like went down the Pantera, like rabbit hole of like, you know, got all their records, like read up about them, their bio and this and that, started going to see them live and was like totally indoctrinated into that like heavy metal sort of scene. And then from Pantera, I got into Metallica and got into Megadeth and all the other different subsets of bands. Actually, a lot of the bands I sort of found out about, the more like random bands, not random, but like sort of more underground stuff, like would be from like looking at Pantera posters and being like, oh, who's this I Hate God band or whatever, or like, oh, like, right. What does that say? Does that say Mayhem? Like, who's Mayhem? Like, is they would be like repping like, you know, more obscure stuff than some of their, at least Phil was.
Yeah, that's how, that's such a good point, because like back in the day before like the internet and all that stuff.
Before Metal Injection.
Before Metal Injection and Lamb Goat, you would look at, you would look through the CDs and you would say, oh, wow, this guy's wearing this T-shirt. Who is this band? And then you go and you have to like order it from the back of like Metal Edge or something like that.
Right.
Like it was such a process getting music, and it was exciting when you would finally be able to hear it.
Right. I know.
Crazy how times have changed.
It's almost too easy now.
Yeah.
I feel like you could, if I grew up in this era, it'd be like, it's like information overload.
I have
like,
to say, it's actually harder. Like now there's so many options that for me, it's harder to find new good music. Like it's just like, it's too much work.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's like an option paralysis. Like there's so many bands out there that are doing things. And I think with the internet, it's made it easier than ever to get your music out there. Right. Which is great for the awesome musicians, but if you're
the consumer,
if you don't have like maybe the best like artistic vision or whatever, write the best riffs, like you could still in theory like, you know, be putting stuff out there. And it just at a certain point, like it just becomes like, all right, there's just a lot of stuff out there to like sift through till you get to the really great stuff.
Do you try to keep up with modern music?
Yeah I'm constantly checking out new bands. This band Suffering Hour is my newest one that I really like in the death metal scene. I think they're from Minneapolis. They're awesome. It sounds like, I don't know, to me, haunted house metal. If that makes any sense. Like, it sounds like you're in like a creepy, but not like a carnival haunted house, like an actual haunted house, like The Exorcist.
There's
kind
no,
of
like
vibe.
Hayride.
No hayride. It's like, it's like demonic and like, you know, creaky door, or like you find a weird book or something like that. Tells you things. I don't know.
What track is the weird book?
Track 3. Yeah.
Can we go back to NAMM for a second?
Sure.
So when I first saw Revocation live, I think it was like in Greenpoint a couple like years ago, and I noticed that you were playing a Jackson Warrior, which is like my favorite.
Oh, sweet.
And you have your own like signature Jackson Warrior.
Mm-hmm. At this point, I do. Yeah.
That's so cool. And it's like, is it just yours, or can like a regular person get it?
Yeah, people can purchase them. I worked really hard with Jackson over the course of maybe about a year and a half, just getting the look of the wood right and the specs on it. So it's interesting. Like you don't really think about things until like you think about them for like a mass consumption kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like because maybe certain things be like, oh yeah, like that. That's fine. And like, but then think about like, okay, what is the best for playability? And like, cause other people are going to be buying, I'm going to be playing my name on it. So I think it actually, I made some discoveries about what I like, thinking about what other people might like, or putting someone else and taking someone else into consideration of like how they would
empathy.
Play it. Yeah. Yeah. So
guitar empathy.
Guitar empathy. Exactly. but yeah, they did a USA model of it, which was with like the custom shop, like Mike Shannon built them. Mike Shannon's like a legend in like the luthier world. Like he used to build guitars for like Randy Rhoads back in the day. So they made like a small limited number of those worldwide, which sold out like pretty quickly, which was really awesome to see. And just like, all right, this is sick. And from there they made a Pro Series model, which is their import series, which is a bit more affordable. Mm-hmm. You can find it maybe in more Guitar Center types of places or whatever, like more boutique shops. It wasn't just like a limited thing. And I think so far those are selling pretty good. And the feedback I've heard from the people that have gotten them has been awesome. Like everyone that's gotten it is like sent me a message or this or that. Not everyone, but a bunch of them. People have great feedback on how much they dig it.
It's such a badass guitar. And
thank
like,
you.
Like anatomically speaking, it's like the most comfortable for a woman to play because you have like that thing that goes like right. Because I like to play high.
Uh-huh.
It just like goes like right here in between my boobs.
Nice. Yeah, I wasn't even thinking about that, but that's cool. Like I also find like man or woman, like the balance of it is really good. Like a
all
lot of times
points.
With it's weird because sometimes with pointy guitars they tend to like really dip when you like sit up with them on like a V. People have had problems like just with the balancing of like the weird angles.
What's the shape of your guitar? What kind of?
That's a Warrior. So it's got
I
like
have
a,
one.
Oh sweet. Okay. Hell yeah. There we go. It's got a pointy thing on one, you know, coming out one end, and there's also a point thing on the back. So it looks crazy, and it looks like it might be like kind of like unwieldy. But because,
so more of an A than a V.
Yeah, I guess so. It's well, you'll see it soon. There you go.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
That.
Right. I got it.
So it like, yeah, it really, it sits well. And you can because of the cutaways, you can sit with it a couple of different ways. So you can sit with it like across your lap, or you could kind of like prop it up more like this.
Like a stand-up bass kind of.
Yeah, kind of like a stand-up bass. So it's cool. I like that there's different options for that guitar. Because when you're playing live, you know, sometimes like I'll play it this way and then I'll swing it up like that.
Yeah. For the kids.
For the kids, you know?
No, it looks so cool playing live. I mean, like, I remember seeing, like, I mean, just like the whole band looks pretty cool on stage. But I was just like, all right, this band sounds good. They look good. I'm in.
Sweet. The Warrior has a lot to do with that, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you look badass when you play it.
Yeah. And I feel like Jackson has been a sponsor of many, like, really great musicians.
For sure.
So it's so cool that you're in that catalog.
Yeah, thank you. It's a real honor. They're great. And the craftsmanship there is just really, really on point.
And okay, one more nerdy thing and then
sure.
I'll stop. You also have DiMarzio pickups.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like another really great brand.
Yeah. While I was working on the Signature Warrior, I was also working on a signature set of pickups with DiMarzio. So it was kind of double the work and like very nerve wracking to kind of sort of work on something from the ground up. Like a lot of guitars, like the pickups, like you were just kind of picking a pickup that you already play or whatever, and like you're throwing it in there. So I had to do like double the R&D for this project. And the pickups were even harder. Like the Warrior, the blueprint was there. It was more like getting the aesthetic, like, okay, how do I want the stain of this ash to be, like the feel of the neck. Like once we dial that in, it's okay. But like with pickups, like you have to really hear the sound of what you're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And we went through maybe like five or six different versions of them where I would tweak like little things. And then I'm also working on a bridge pickup and a neck pickup at the same time. So it's like, all right, I like this neck pickup, but this bridge that sent, like, I want to change these things. And then like maybe the bridge changed. Then you go back to the neck and you're like, all right, yeah, but then maybe they don't balance well now. So I can change this about the neck. So you kind of have to like keep whittling down like little small factors until you find the right ones. And again, with the Warrior, I've got really great feedback, and the pickups, I've gotten such awesome feedback as well from some people that have played them. Everyone from like metal dudes, I've had like jazz fusion guys play them and I've gotten great feedback. They're very toneful. So it's great that, I've got something that I can put my name on and be proud of, not just like I'm doing it just to like do it. Like I was really trying searching for a sound.
Yeah.
And DiMarzio is, like you said, like such a legendary company. They work with, you know, Steve Vai, Joe Satriani. When you think about some of these huge names in rock and metal and blues, they've really branched out to a lot of different players. You think about DiMarzio, and I've actually really become close with the DiMarzio family.
Yeah, there's I remember because we covered, I was a part of it like a long time ago, and there was this one guy who's like an older guy, and he's the one that works with all the artists from DiMarzio, and he just like knew everything. It's just like so cool to meet these like old school guys.
Oh yeah, you're talking about Steve Blucher?
Yeah,
Steve is the man. I love Steve. He's great. And then Larry, he's the owner of the company.
Mm-hmm.
Larry's just a super talented guy. He like is constantly working on like new projects. He does photography and like all the AV stuff for DiMarzio. Like he does all that. And he also like builds acoustic guitars and speak. He's always doing different shit, and it's always killer. So I feel very fortunate to be friends with the actual DiMarzio family now. Like when I like, they'll do all the content like out in Montana where he lives and like fly me out. And it's like, we'll do the video shoot. And it's not just like, all right, see you at the hotel. It's like, oh, it's like popping open bottles of wine and like hanging out. Yeah, no, really. It's like, it's just awesome to hang. And they're so cool. Really love this. Shout out to the DiMarzio family. Love you guys.
And it's interesting because, excuse me.
Choking on some popcorn.
It's interesting. It's like, you're not just sustaining yourself with your music. You're like a pitchman for this gear now, sort of, and a gear maker in a sense, because I mean you're
the product developer.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So is that like a big part of your income with the stuff, or is that more just like side stuff?
I mean, I'm not like going to start driving around like a Ferrari or anything like that from like the royalties of that. Like, but I mean, it's nice to get royalty checks for sure for like for any amount of money, I mean, especially like in the metal realm. It's like, oh, they got hot dogs for us. This is amazing. You know, so like when you actually like get like a check, you know, every quarter or whatever, it's a nice little bonus or whatever. But yeah, I don't think like I'm sure like John Mayer is going to sell like, you know, thousands of guitars. Right. So like that will probably be a very sizable chunk of income like every year for him. Whereas like, I'm obviously not as known as John Mayer is.
The guitar is nicer.
It depends on who you ask, but I like to think that the although he just did a kind of like a Strat with PRS, and it looks pretty cool. I'm a sucker for Strats. I love a Strat.
And a big John Mayer fan, I guess.
You know, I started listening to some of his stuff on some of his EPs, and I really enjoyed it.
He went to the Berklee School of Music. He's very educated musician.
Me and him have that in common.
Oh, you also went to Berklee.
Yep.
Nice. Okay, well, that explains a lot.
Have you paid off your student debt yet, or is it still?
I was lucky enough to get a good sizable scholarship.
Oh.
Yeah. But I, you know, it wasn't the whole thing. So, but it eased the burden of paying it off.
So it's paid off. You're
yes,
good.
Yes, yes.
That's good. That's all lucky. How did you get the scholarship? Was it a?
It was like a performance based thing.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
So what? When did you like? How did you get so good at guitar? Like, what was it? Something you were always into, or?
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate. I mean, I think sometimes like I don't know like. When I'm playing, I'm like, why do I suck? Like, I try to like, I'm always like working on
things.
You
gotta do something right.
And then like, I think maybe it's that like constant striving to be better, like never being satisfied with your playing.
Yeah.
I think that maybe that's one of the main factors. I think you have some people that like, you know, they get to a certain level and they're like, all right, cool. Like I got it under control. I think for me, like my mindset is as soon as you start thinking that, like
you're done,
done. Yeah, yeah. You know, so you have to always strive even just for, I mean, for making new music, right? Wouldn't you always want to be like challenging yourself, like making new
just
ideas?
Just to keep it interesting.
Right, exactly.
And music is such like a large, it's like an endless realm of information.
Right.
So why would you want to stop here when it's just like constantly expanding like outer space?
Right. And there's so many different styles and this and that. You know, I mean, even within metal, right? Like, there, you know, you could be good at, you know, one style of metal.
Yeah, riffing or soloing.
Right, right. Yeah. And there's certainly like a technique aspect of it that you have to keep up, but really it's just sort of, I think, an overall phrasing, musicality sort of thing. Like, how can I get better? But that's maybe the overall contributing factor to that. But
when did you start?
I started when I was 12.
Okay.
I started taking lessons like
so my 20 years then.
Yeah. I
said, damn. Wow.
Yeah.
Boom.
I know. It's like 20 years. Like I should be. Be better than what
you got
I'm
to
at,
play
you know,
with Marty Freeman. So shut up. You're fine.
Yeah, any like later career like aspirations to do like a John Mayer esque thing or something like less heavy?
Or like a jazz album.
Play with Chick Corea.
Well, man, that would be a dream come true. Yeah, I've definitely been grinding in the jazz scene a bit more. I've been trying to work on my vocabulary with that back home in Boston. When I'd be home from tour, I'd be like linking up with different musicians, like just playing like jazz gigs here and there, like little things. Like it'd be like a corporate like holiday party or this or that, or like a brunch sort of thing. But the saxophone player in particular was just like such like, and the bass player for this one holiday party was actually my old teacher from high school. I hit him up like out of the blue, like, hey, you got time for this gig? He's like a monstrous upright bass player, and the sax player's name is Eric Van Dam. Shout out to Eric. He is incredible, like totally has like Wayne Shorter, like Eric Dolphy, like Coltrane vibes, like just so, so killer. He studied with like Joe Lovano, who's like a monstrous jazz saxophone player like back in the day. Anyway, so like playing with other musicians in a totally different genre is really inspiring to me. So I'd like to continue to explore that. Mm-hmm. It's just, it requires so much dedication. I've even taken some lessons with Adam Rogers down in New York here. He's an incredible, one of the best guitar players in the world, in my opinion, like just a monster jazz player. So I've been working with him on
still something you dabble in.
Yeah, you know, trying to work on that more. So it'd be cool to do more of that. I'm actually starting up a brand new band relatively soon. It's me and my buddy Luke. He lives in Canada. He plays in a band called Ayahuasca, which is like an incredible, they're just like an awesome prog metal rock band. So this new project, not to put like labels on it, but if I had to like say like sounds like something, it's like maybe like a really progged out version of Alice in Chains, like mixed with like that band Virus from Norway a little bit. So,
and you're doing vocals as well?
Yeah, I mean, on the demos right now, like it's all Luke singing, but I'll probably when we go in and actually record, I'll probably do some vocals. It's gonna be, no screaming on it, just all singing. And I'm really excited about the material right now. We're looking for a drummer, and we're looking for a bass player who can also sing. So if you guys know anybody, you let me know.
It's the Gmail.
It's the Gmail, ddavidsonlessons@gmail.com.
There you go. And if you want some lessons.
If you want some lessons, that works.
Yeah.
I'm working on different projects. I've got different irons in the fire.
Look at that. A teacher, product developer, musician.
Yeah. You have to be diverse if you want to make music your career, right? Very rarely.
Music is your full-time job, basically, right?
Yeah, some form of it, right? Whether it's teaching or going on tour or little product things. I'm actually working right now. I can't say too much, but I'm actually developing two different guitar pedals with two different companies that are really awesome.
And do these companies want to work with you? They come to you, I'm assuming, right?
I mean, with Jackson, I was with them for so long, and it was something like they were already making me sort of custom guitars like every album cycle. And I think that they saw that there was, more and more of an interest for me. Plus I was playing the Warrior, which kind of up until that point, wasn't really getting a lot of love. Like no one really was playing it. So, I mean, I just thought it was like the coolest shape ever. So I'm like, hell yeah. Like of the bad ass metal shapes, like this is the one for me. Mm-hmm. So I think they appreciated that. And they saw like maybe with the success of like my buddy Misha from Periphery, like his signature series, or like Chris Broderick, like, There's people out there that, want to play these guitars of musicians that they like, right?
Yeah.
Especially because, again, there's that R&D element that goes into it that's different from maybe like how like a guitar builder at Jackson would, because people that are building guitars at Jackson have been doing it for a long time, but they're not like going on the road for like 6 months out of the year and like playing things every night. So like maybe just like stepping outside the box a bit is going to give you a different take on something, right? Like for me, on my signature guitar, like I move the pickup selector and like the tone knob around. Like it's like a very small thing, but like people have been like, that makes more sense to have it like this because it was kind of getting in the way before. This like little things like that where you just by playing for hours on stage every night, like or across a tour, you sort of start to see little things here and there. So yeah, it's cool to developing things. I like to teach. I like to tour. So
and you like to eat.
I like to eat.
We're all big eaters here.
I could see that with all these chips.
Rob was snacking away while we were nerding out.
Yeah.
And Sid took a picture. I can't wait to see what that looks
like. At least Rob stayed away from the mic with the chomping.
Well, I muted it.
Oh, you did? I didn't hear it, so that's same difference.
Well, you mentioned the hot dogs. Is there a particular venue that has the best catering that you always like, oh, we're playing this venue, it's going to be awesome?
Not a venue, but a festival. Hands down. I'm glad that you brought this up because
this is important.
Heavy MTL. It's like in
Heavy
it's
Montreal.
Just happened. Best catering. Literally, what's that guy's name? He's like an Iron Chef in Canada. Chuck something. He's like a good looking Canadian guy. Like he like has like a cooking show.
Oh,
you probably like to see him like making scrambled eggs.
Don't know them.
His name's Chuck something. I think he had a show called like Chuck's Day Off or something like that where he'd like cook. And anyway, like he was fucking catering the thing. Like he was like making pizzas like behind. I'm like,
oh,
whoa.
He was there. The food?
Yeah.
That's insane.
Wow.
Yeah. He was like legit like a Food Network.
Mm. Chuck Hughes.
Chuck Hughes. Yeah. So like, can I see a picture of him? Yeah. That's him. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And I mean, there was other people. I mean, there was like a whole team of caterers there, but like he was there like in the morning, like making sure like the pizza oven was. So let me just, if I can remember correctly, walk you guys down the line.
Please.
So it was like a brick,
we want as much detail
like brick oven pizza, like just like fresh mozzarella.
Being made bacon, right there.
Right there. Like, and then pull them out, like cut them up, like, here, who wants a slice of this? And I'm like, all right, yep, definitely that. They had like multiple different like, they had a poutine station. Mm. They had like more of like a grill, like burger thing, but it was all really good quality. Just giant blocks of like Parmesan cheese that you could just like the good shit. Like you could just kind of shave it off and put it on your plate if you wanted like a salad or just put more cheese on your plate. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Was what I was doing.
Any poutine?
Yeah, they had a poutine station. I think they had like maybe some other, like, there might have been like a Thai station or some kind of like fried rice thing, like definitely like a chocolate fondue fountain.
Oh my god. Oh my god.
They had fondue.
Yeah, like profiteroles, like yeah, fresh fruits. And I'm probably forgetting like a bunch of shit. And that was just for like lunch. You know, like they had like breakfast was like a different menu. Like
what?
Yeah, it was crazy. And like I definitely, we played one show and then we just like didn't leave the fairgrounds because like it went for like 2 days. And we're like, these passes just like work for like the whole thing. And they were like, yeah, yeah. And I'm like, all right, cool. We're just going to like party with Pig Destroyer and sleep in our van. And then just like woke up the next morning, like, oh, morning. Like, wait, you guys are still here? Like, yeah, I'll do 2 eggs up. And
Chuck working overtime on that grill.
That was so sick. And then, you know, we got to hang out for like the rest of the show. And like, and the food was great, but the show was also amazing. Like, to play with, like, I mean, we weren't on the same stage, but I'm just going to say that we play with Faith No More because they're like one of my favorite bands, and yeah, they're at the same festival. So
it was you were both on the same poster.
Yes.
They were separate posters.
Right, right. Yeah. Our logo was a bit smaller than theirs was, and it was more towards the bottom.
If you blow up the poster large enough,
right,
yeah, it's
the same
fine.
Size.
Yeah, it's fine.
Did you see Mike Patton at the buffet at any point? Did you see what he was eating?
I did not see Mike Patton at the buffet at all. I kind of creepily stalked around the because again, like our passes got us like all access or whatever.
Yeah.
So I was like watching Faith No More side stage and just like being like, this is such a trip, like so cool. And like, yeah, like kind of like was like, I'm gonna say something to them. And like they like kind of got off stage, but like they literally like walked off stage and there was like an SUV waiting and they just like kind of got in and like drove away. I was like, love you, Mike.
Yeah. Come back.
So yeah, I didn't get to have, you know, any cool interactions at all. There was, you know, wasn't like invited me on stage for a guitar solo.
One
or
day
running,
though.
So, yeah.
One day.
That would be cool.
So that was the best one. Are there any runners up for good catering or just really the festival is the only thing?
Well, I mean, yeah, there's definitely runners up. Like we played with Children of Bodom one time in Toronto at this like really nice venue that I think we've only played once, and they definitely balled out on the catering that night. Like that was sick. Sometimes like just like smaller European clubs like just kill it. Like I've had like an amazing spread, like when we played like France before, like,
yeah,
and, like real
like
good
Europe.
Cheese and stuff. So yeah,
anywhere outside America. So.
Yeah.
Well, you don't get catering in the States on tour. They don't like, unless
like a per diem, right?
Yeah, you get like the club will do like a buyout, or like maybe they'll get pizza, but like usually it's like, I don't know, like Papa John's or some like shitty thing like that.
I
so
mean,
like
we went to
always take the buyout. Right?
Yeah, that's what I do because I'm like I don't know like what their version of pizza is gonna be.
Yeah.
You know.
And a buyout just means they'll give you money to go get food.
Right.
Yeah, like $10 or $15.
That's right. Right.
Bullshit.
Yeah.
We went to Sounds of the Underground that time. Remember?
Yeah.
And
the
you,
first one.
I think it was four of us, and you had two passes.
Yeah.
So like we were trading off passes to go in and get food, like back and forth. It was like the shittiest food. It was like school lunch cafeteria or whatever.
That was just the venues. Yeah.
That was the venues thing, but it was bands in there. It was where the bands were eating.
Right. But I mean, like, that was just the venue, what the venue was preparing. The year before you went, actually, they brought in caterers. They,
what?
Like, really upped their budget.
I heard Mayhem Fest had good catering, you know, at least on, like, a couple of the years or whatever.
Right, right. They were legit. Do you have a favorite food to eat on the road or like a pre-show meal? Like what are some food rituals of yours?
I kind of am just down with everything. It's for me, it's more like what's good in the area. And I can kind of like just make myself get hungry for that. Like if someone's like, yo, there's like a pho place that's like amazing. Like, right. Like Chinatown's like right around the corner. And I'll be like, all right, yeah, I'm in. Like if that's like the most legit thing. Or if someone's like, oh, there's like killer Mexican down the block. Like I also like do like check things out like on my phone. Like look, I've got this app called Chef's Feed, which is kind of cool. I've been telling like a bunch of fellow foodie friends about it.
What's that?
Let's hear about it.
It's cool. It's like Yelp, but it's written by chefs, so you don't get like idiots on there like just being like,
oh, what is it called again?
It's called Chef's Feed. It doesn't work like everywhere. It only works in like major cities that have like a food scene already. But you know, San Francisco or I mean, obviously Brooklyn, it's sick because like Brooklyn's actually the best place to have it by far because there's so much stuff on there.
Yeah.
And it's cool because it's written by chefs and they tell you it's a kind of sort of similar to Yelp where they have like the how many dollar signs something is. So you know, like, all right, am I going to ball out or is it going to be like a cheap eat? I mean, in New York, it's like pretty much always like $3 signs, you know, for anything. But
what do? They pay the chefs to do this?
I don't know if they pay them or if it's just like it's a cross promotional thing. But it's cool because they tell you not only where to go, but what specific dish to get at that restaurant.
Oh,
so it's
cool.
Like, oh, this is my favorite Thai spot. And you have to get like this Thai fried rice. Like it's amazing. Or like, okay, this is like this Italian spot. And they do like wood oven roasted meatballs. And it's like so sick. And it's not like, you know, paragraphs and paragraphs. It's usually like a picture of what the dish is to get, a little description of what's in it. It could be a sentence to a paragraph.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, oh, cool. Like, yeah, I trust this, like, Michelin star chef to like tell me where to get good like bim bim bop or whatever, like I'll go there.
Yeah, that's a great fucking idea. I always hear these apps. I wish I thought of it.
Right.
It seems so simple at the time, you know.
Yeah. And that way too, there's no like Yelp reviews can be like just mean and shitty and like be bad for the restaurant.
It's like resentful. Yeah. Like just like resentful.
Nobody
for
nobody ever writes a good review.
Right, right.
Everyone likes to complain.
But are there like bad reviews or are they only highlight good things?
Well, that's the thing about chefs. Yeah, you're not sifting through bullshit. Like if it's not a good place, they're not going to review it. Yeah, it'll just show up like what are the places that these chefs have posted about like in your area. Like here, I do it right now. Where's my phone?
Okay. Let's see what the Bay Ridge hotspots are.
Let's see if we got anything. Sometimes I will say it's
Tannerine.
A little bit.
That's like
yeah, it's got to be on there.
Yeah,
see hotspots. Looking it up. Karam, Bay Ridge,
yeah,
Middle Eastern.
That's really good.
Yeah.
Okay, so we can confirm.
I had that a couple nights ago.
Okay, let's see what they say to get there. Get the chicken shawarma. This is not a shy dish. It will be with you for the rest of the day. The chicken is so deep and flavorful, and the pickled radishes give your sour crunch that perfect. How am I reading this? You have sour crunch that perfectly completes this wrap. Damn. All right.
Get your camera ready when you hit that bathroom, fellas.
Chester.
Fit also had a sour crunch.
Usually.
Fit is a sour crunch.
And then you can just kind of like zoom out.
Oh, that's
and there's
sweet.
Like, you know, bunch of spots there. You kind of click that Sunset Park and it like shows you where they all are.
It's awesome.
Yeah. I like
nice.
It.
So I'm plugging the Chef's Feed app.
Yeah.
You an investor?
I'm not an investor.
Yeah.
I can't
but
add
you would,
that.
You would invest.
I guess I would invest. Yeah.
You should do a version of that with dudes and bands.
Like just, go here and watch this band.
No. Like the same thing, but instead of chefs reviewing the restaurants, it's guys and bands.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
Ladies and bands.
Right. Right.
Yeah. It would just be like, yeah, if you're feeling like a scumbag and only want to spend $2 of your buyout,
right.
Go to this place.
Right. Like the ramen noodles at this spot, or like, oh, the ramen place. Like, yeah, the package. You
yeah.
know,
flavor pack.
You gotta bring your own hot water.
Yeah. Like most. What I've found, like, I mean, it's cool in my band, like, everyone's, like, like a pretty adventurous eater, like, but I definitely, like, will ball out, like, more than, like, anybody else. Like, I've broken from the herd on many occasions because they're like, oh, like, yeah, you know, we're going to grab something here. And I'm like, but, like, only, like, 1.7 miles away is this other spot. Like, we can probably walk it in 40 minutes. And they're like, all right,
yeah.
Like, you have fun and, like, you know, sell food adventures.
Yeah, I'm into it. I would be right there with you if I was on tour with you.
Thank you. Well, we'll go out for some dinner sometime.
Yeah.
What are you
we
doing
should.
Tonight? Probably
open. I already ate actually before I came over.
What'd you have?
Oh. I had a fried chicken sandwich, the apple slaw.
Ooh.
It had a little bit of sour crunch. It was in Gowanus.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Lovely air. Do you prefer corn or flour tortilla?
That's a tough one.
Mm.
That's hard.
Go ahead. Sorry.
And we're talking soft. We're not talking hard shell. Soft shell.
Right, right.
So a hard shell, definitely.
Yeah, you got to do
corn.
Yeah.
That's not a question. But
I kind of like, I like the flour tortilla, you know, I'm not going to lie. But at the same time, if it's a really legit spot, I'll get down with the corn tortilla. Like, I feel like the flour. It's not my go-to.
The thing is, if it's a real authentic Mexican restaurant, they don't serve flour tortillas.
Right. Well,
And that's a shame because I like flour tortillas better, but it's their food. What am I going to say?
Yeah.
What if it stinks? Yeah.
We were both on the 70,000 tons of metal cruise last year, not this year, 2017.
Mm-hmm.
You guys were like the party MVPs of the boat. But one memory I have vividly is we all had dinner together, your band, me, Frank from Metal Injection, if we had like a whole dinner, and you know the guy was coming around, the waiter was coming around to take our order, and this was the last night of the cruise, and I was like, yeah, I'll have the shrimp cocktail, and you were like, you're gonna have the shrimp cocktail on a on the fourth day of a cruise. Like, you're gonna have shrimp that's just sitting there in the freezer for 4 days.
You hope it was in the freezer.
Yeah. You were giving me so much shit for having 4-day-old shrimp cocktail.
Oh my god! I wish you could see the photo of the bag of shrimp that Rob brought to this podcast many years ago.
I don't know why this is so gross to know, but you know, like in the freezer aisle, you can get like a 10-pound bag of shrimp.
Yeah, I do know that. Yeah.
I once had one of those bags of shrimp for dinner.
But yeah. it was like all the ice was like just water at the bottom of the bag, and you were taking out the shrimp.
Yeah, you didn't like cook it or anything. You just let it.
I mean,
like,
it was already pre-cooked. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like shrimp.
No, well, I appreciate that. Yeah, your shrimp game is, you roll so hard on
but,
it.
Like, here's the thing. Like, I when you said that to me, I'm like, I'm not expecting top of the line shrimp. I'm not. This is like lame shrimp. You know, it's like those weird.
Yeah.
Like
yeah,
poppy shrimp.
I can't get down. Like, I love shrimp, but like I have to have a cutoff because otherwise it's just like. It's not like I'm like, oh, I'm too good for the I just don't like
it. It's not worth it.
It's not worth it. Yeah, it's like not, the juice isn't worth the squeeze, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like.
And there's way too much juice in those.
Yeah, yeah. And they kind of, sometimes they're like kind of soggy and like waterlogged. Like you can tell they've been like maybe frozen and refrozen a few times. Like the proteins have like.
Have you ever had food poisoning?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so that's why. Like you're very cautious probably.
Yeah, I've gotten rocked out pretty hard. And I've gotten food poisoning on tour, which sucks.
That's the worst.
So bad. Yeah.
What do you like? So, you have like bad stomach cramps, and you're like on a 7 mile, like a 7 hour drive. Where do you like? You just keep telling them to pull over so you can take a quick dump, or like, what do you do?
So sad. I don't even know if I want to hear your painful story.
So, the worst time I ever had food poisoning, maybe ever, was when I was on tour in Italy, and we had like a day off in Venice, and if you tour Europe, you never play Venice, and you certainly never have like a day off there. It was like this like magical day. Like my bandmates were going on like gondola rides and like eating like fresh calamari like by the canal, and it was like, oh, like living like their best lives. And I'm like in a hotel room like just dying, like fevers.
There's an
like,
exorcism happening in your
yeah
room.
Exactly, like just so I remember like it hit me like a ton of bricks like the night before. Thankfully we were in a bus, and we were like pulling like up to this hotel that we were going to stay at. So like all the kind of stars aligned that allowed me to like barely live, like we're there. But like, I remember going in like to the bathroom, like looking at my face in the mirror, and like, I was like just ghost white, like sweating, like felt like I was going to collapse. Like it like hit me like a ton of bricks, and I was just like, I need to get room, please. And they're like, okay. Like, you know, yeah, swipe the card. Oh, it went through. Okay. Yeah, sure. There you go. And I just like told my dudes like, yo, like I can't leave this room. Like I'm done.
Yeah.
That's
a bummer.
Yeah. It was totally a bummer. So yeah, luckily I didn't like shit my pants in the van or anything like that.
But back to the cruise though, do you have any lasting memories? Cause,
yeah, I mean, just that whole thing was so crazy. Like, you know, where did you go, to Haiti?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like a random.
Yeah. Like, you know, to kind of feel like we sudo like, played Haiti or, you know, like
it wasn't, yeah, like just
like
to be
waters,
just to be
like,
clear, like the crews own this little plot of land
right,
Haiti,
right.
So we weren't like really in Haiti,
right? But it's,
we weren't allowed to leave this resort type area,
right?
And
wait, you weren't allowed? Why weren't you allowed?
You could only stay with it. I mean, I guess you could do like a tour, you could do like a guided tour or whatever, but mostly everything happened on this. Like,
right, but I'm saying like if you just decided as a human being to
no,
go,
you couldn't just walk out
there like armed guards there. Like how did you couldn't leave?
Well, the boat wasn't like we weren't there for like days. It was like you had like a 6 hour window like at this thing.
I gotcha.
Like, I mean, you probably could have wandered off, but then the boat's gonna like take off without you, and then
yeah,
like, you're
I see. All right, I thought you were there for a few days or something.
Well, the trip there and back was what, you know, was the longest.
You're mostly at sea.
Yeah, you're mostly at sea. So yeah, just
it's such a good vibe.
Yeah,
on that boat.
Totally, and it was like so much, yeah, just so much fun. Like the band, like seeing like Anthrax like rip it up like on a boat, you know, or like some like I got to like do guest vocals with Cow Decapitation. That was cool. I sang like Forced Gender Reassignment, my favorite song of theirs. It was just a cool fucking
Trash
time.
From Cow Decapitation played our game, Death or No Death.
Oh, cool.
Coming right up in
coming
a few
right
moments.
Up.
Let's take a call really quick. Once again, the number to dial, 213-WIDENUT, 213-943-3688. We have area code 317. Hello.
Hello, hello. Hello, hello.
What's up, 317?
What's your name?
Ed Wilfred.
Hello, Ed.
Oh, hey, what's up? Chat regular.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
What's going on?
Oh, nothing much. I was just calling in because Sydney said I should call in and talk to you folks.
Okay. Why?
He's running for office.
Really?
Yes.
Where?
That's awesome.
Yes, yep.
His real name is
I am running for office. No, it's not. No, I am running for office in a small town called Plainfield in Indiana. And specifically, I'm running for Guilford Township Board member.
What do you do if you win?
So basically, so I'd basically be in charge, like, I'd help run the, like, the park and, like, the public library and, like, the water park we have here as well. So.
Okay, here's my question to you. Do you support a woman's right to choose whether or not she should get an abortion? What are your feelings on LGBTQ?
Usually when you say right to choose, we know, like, you didn't have to clarify.
Oh, okay.
Well, considering he's going to be water park, it could be like the right to choose, like, what floaty.
She support
the
ride
yeah.
to choose.
You support a woman's right,
a slide.
The right to choose corner flour tortilla.
yeah, I do support a woman's right to choose which slide she's going to go down. You know, what book she's going to choose from the library. Absolutely, yeah.
Nice.
Well, we support you.
Yeah.
As a
well,
show.
Thank you. I do appreciate it. I mean, basically, it's just like,
like, is that what you studied in school? Like, what made you want to get politically active?
Oh, okay. So, yeah. What made me want to do it is just, you know, like, the current state of affairs in this country is really quite, abysmal and
yes.
just awful in terms of, like, you know, you have open Nazis running for office. You have, a Nazi as president, shit like that. And it's just, I'm just tired of sitting here and doing nothing. So...
Yeah.
You know, one day I just I talked to the local, the head of the Democratic Party for the county. I'm just like, hey, I'll run for anything. Just, I just want to get out there, And, it's not like it's a huge office or like a huge deal or anything like that. But the way I see it, it's like a stepping stone. You know, it's like I'll have experience, doing something, which is, in like some political office, which is more than our president has ever done. So,
the next Mike Pence.
Has Sacha Baron Cohen ever pranked you before?
No, he has not. I am definitely. Yeah, I absolutely will be on alert for him and his antics, certainly. But I just want to let people know that no matter how big of a scumbag that you think you are. Like, I'm a giant scumbag.
Vote for me. I'm a giant scumbag.
Exactly. That's what it's like. Just because you think that you can't, you can't do it. Like, you can't. It's really not that hard. You just gotta, hit the, knock on doors and all that good stuff. And,
Ed over here.
I probably have to know a little bit more, but sounds you're saying the right thing, so I appreciate that. So why not? I guess.
Now, if you win your election, are you going to be too big for us and not call in anymore? Or will you call in regularly to let us know how the library and water park are doing?
You know what? Yeah, I can do that. I can promise that.
Nice.
That if I end up in office, I'll keep calling in. Sure.
Will you put a metal injection sticker in your office, or maybe like the Raba face?
On all the slides.
I don't think I'm gonna have an actual office.
But
someday if I do have one, I'll certainly put, you know, Metal Injection sticker up.
J2 pizza menu.
Those are outlawed in Indiana.
Oh, right. Sorry.
Oh, I wonder if J2 Pizza comes up on that app.
Oh, my God. We'll look into that. Well, Edward, nice to hear from you. We encourage you.
Are you taking donations? Are you, you know, like...
No corporate PAC money.
That's right. Yeah, I'm not really taking any donations.
Stay away from Big Rolling.
Really just...
Disney Lobby.
Yeah.
Stay pure.
Right. Thank you for your call, Ed.
Yeah.
How many campaigns are you
running? Oh, no problem. You guys have a good one.
Goodbye.
All right. Next call. Or it could be.
This one is the down. You know.
Oh, this is the down one.
Goodbye.
That was the upbeat one.
You got me.
Tricked you.
All right, is it time?
It's whenever you say it's time.
I think it's time for our favorite game show. The game where you decide which band is fake, which band is real, with our host, Darren Delgado, the dangerous one. He's not that dangerous.
A little bit more of a talk up there.
You know him.
I thought we were going to play...
As the man of 1,000 voices. As the... The parody song king.
He's the host with the most.
It's Death or No Death with
Darren. Yes. Thank you.
Host, Darren Delgado.
Yes, everyone.
Can you mouth us a drum fill?
Just to like introduce him in. All right. Now I'm into it. Welcome to Death or No Death, the game show where you decide if the metal bands are real or if they are fake. For the purposes of this game, metal is very, very broadly defined as anything from, say, glam to prog rock to hard rock to sludge, all the way to black metal grind and power violence. Also, for a band to be considered real, guys, they must have at least one music track available on a reputable music or video site, like, say, Bandcamp, Last.fm, YouTube, etc. We will play two rounds of six categories each, where three bands are real and one is fake. Each question is worth 1 point. As is our tradition here on Death or No Death, the two highest scoring players will square off in a lightning round where they will answer 40 rapid fire questions, real or fake, at hyper speed. And the highest scorer is the winner. And each one of our contestants, they will be playing for a caller to win a prize package. Rob, what prize packages do we have that they can win?
We have prize packages?
Oh, we didn't talk about that.
Oh, I will. We talked about it beforehand, but you said I will figure it out later. So now it's later.
Can we give out a revocation CD? Yeah, there we go.
All right, that
we
works.
We got a nice little revocation.
On behalf of Metal Blade Records.
Yes, thanks to Metal Braid. Metal Blade Records. Okay.
Metal Braid, real or fake?
We might have something nice for our losers, too. It's always good to give something.
Yes, and yes, all of our runners-up will get a Metal Injection Livecast T-shirt.
Our slogan is, you'll get something and you'll get it eventually. That's what we do on this show.
Probably.
All right, I'm going to read the categories to you guys.
How do we determine who's playing for who?
Well, I thought... we didn't hammer that out yet either.
We did not hammer that one out, yes.
We're not very... well, let's do that right now. Take some people from the chat and see who wants to win a prize.
Who would like to be represented here in the Death or No Death? We have a live chat going on. On our website, metalinjection.net/livecast, it pays to listen live. You get to get some prizes. So, Dave, since you endorsed Ed, I think you should play for Edward Wilfred.
I guess I gave him an endorsement. It was sort of half-hearted.
Since you went
I don't
close
know
to an endorsement.
Being polite.
Rob, who are you playing for?
I will play for 732 Cheese.
Oh, okay.
Because he just took a raging dump.
No, he's being mean to Edward Wilford in the chat.
Well, it's they're just fighting raising the,
oh, wait a minute.
The competition.
Right. You know what? I take it back. I will not represent 732
yeah,
Cheese.
He also appears to be a Trump supporter.
Yeah. Oh, I can't.
Oh,
then no. I can't play.
He kind of balked when
he also likes
when
corn tortillas.
When Edward said that Trump is a Nazi, he went, "What?"
So I will play for Douglas Levison.
Douglas Levison. Sid? Who are we going to put? Oh, you can choose.
Yeah, I don't know who's in there.
But you know who's always in there.
Rob, give me list off some people for me.
Leroy.
That are actually in.
Leroy.
Is Leroy actually in right
yeah.
now? Sure, I'll play for Leroy.
Leroy. All
I'm
right.
going to play for 3D in the chat.
What? No. I'm disqualified.
Leroy is not in there right now.
No. Then no Leroy. Right. Is El Deuterino?
No, today
he
at
is
8:12.
In there.
I'll play for Deuterino.
He exited the chat.
All right, fine. I'll play for Leroy then.
Okay. It's all set.
All right. So you guys ready to pick a category?
So we got to guess the wrong one.
Yeah.
The one that's fake.
You
want to
pick
Darren?
The one, always the one that's fake.
Okay, always pick the fake one.
And let's read your categories for round one. We have Cry Me a River, Star Power. Wait, what? Let's Go Meth. Who Am I? And My Necro, My Back. Dave, you're our guest, so we'll let you pick a category. I'll just give you the categories. Look at them.
All right.
Let's pass those around.
Let's Go Meth.
Let's Go Meth. All right, guys. These are all bands that are related to meth. Meth in the title. And I'll read them out for you first. A, Meth Vagina. B, Meth Tooth. C-O-O-T-H, tooth. C, Meth Leopard. Or D, Billy Crystal Meth. And Sid will start because you picked the category. We'll go around the table. Sid, you want to take a look at the categories?
I'm going to say the fake one is Billy Crystal Meth.
Billy Crystal Meth. And Rob?
Can I see the
sure,
sheet,
sorry.
Please? I just need to... Okay, so we have...
A, meth vagina.
We have meth vagina,
mm-hmm.
meth tooth, meth leopard, Billy Crystal meth.
I'm going to go C, meth leopard.
That's the one I was going to choose, meth leopard. It just sounds like a Darren concoction.
Mm, okay. And Dave?
I'm going to say A, meth vagina.
Meth vagina, well... The correct answer, guys, the fake band is Meth Vagina. Very
wow.
well done.
Yeah.
Awesome.
This makes no sense. You
yeah.
know, like
yeah.
meth tooth, people think of meth with the mouth, and then everything else is like a play on the meth. So.
I was going with that thought process too, but then I was like, Billy Crystal might sue them. Why would they wouldn't do that?
It'll
that
never get on his
real.
Radar. It'll
now,
never
well,
get
he
radar.
Listens to this podcast every week now.
He may never. Yeah, he may. I was going to say he may never have heard it up until now. Well, guys, now we have the remaining categories. Who Am I? My Necro, My Back, Cry Me a River, Star Power, and wait, what? Sid, you pick a category.
I think we know which category I'm picking. My Necro, My Back.
My Necro, My Back. Guys, these are feminine-themed bands with the word necro in the title. Very specific. Feminine-themed bands with the word necro in the
okay.
title. A, Necro Vulva. B, Necro Whore. C, Necro Slut.
Very feminine.
Or D, Necro Titties.
Oh, for God's sake.
Noah, three of these are real. One is fake. Made up by me.
I'm sorry, host of the most, but could you repeat the first one?
Yeah, I'll just pass them
around so we don't have to repeat. But I will repeat them one more time for the audience.
Necro
Vulva. Necro Whore. Necro Slut. Necro Titties.
I'm going to say the fake one is Necro Vulva.
Necro
and that's
vulva.
My final answer.
Okay. Rob. Necro Titties makes so little sense that it has to be real. Like, what? Like, do you just go grave robbing titties or something? Like, how? What does that mean?
Well, all of these, if by that logic, would incur grave robbing in a sense.
I guess that's true. But, like.
Have you wrote it into your will, though, that you were.
And you know, if you
that's
think about it,
point.
Necro slut and necro whore are like the same thing. Like, what's the difference between a slut and a whore? Like, a whore gets paid for it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's all that is. So, I guess, so that makes it difficult. Maybe one of those could be a fake. Because it's like, if you're a band called Necro Slut, you would check to make sure there's no necro whore.
Right.
And vice versa.
Probably.
Would you,
yeah,
if you are
so.
Necro slut?
Yeah.
I don't
think
so.
I don't think so.
I need an answer, Bob.
Okay.
Is there a timer on this thing?
Okay. I will do B, Necro Slut.
B, Necro Slut. Dave.
Yeah, I'm going Necro Titties.
Necro Titties.
I was going to say Necro Slut, but I'm changing it to Necro Whore.
Necro Whore.
So now each one of us has picked an option. Only one of us could be correct.
Yes.
And the correct answer, guys, the fake band is
Necro Titty.
Wow.
Damn it!
Very nice. Two for two, right?
Yep.
I psyched myself out.
All right.
I just thought goat whore is too close to necro whore, so maybe a band wouldn't do that because they probably like
I've
goat
whore.
I've
heard of necro slut. I think I've seen that one.
We played with necro slut.
Tinder name.
No, it's your turn to pick a category. We have Cry Me a River, Star Power. Wait, what? And Who Am I?
I'm going to go with the category that I say the most, which is, wait, what?
Wait, what? Okay, guys.
Oh.
These are band names with comically misused words, misinterpreting the English language. Thermonuclear abortion.
Wait, what?
Thermonuclear abortion. B. Psychiatric regurgitation. C. Brutal sphincter. Or D. Awaiting imminent death. That's going
to
be
definitely
Rob's choice first.
I think this one is even harder than the last one because all of these sound ridiculous.
Right. Yeah. People not understanding how language works.
So one of these is fake.
One is fake. Three are very real.
Thermonuclear.
And I will say, I will give you guys a hint here. I don't know how much of a hint this is, but it's a statement of fact. Three of these, the real ones, are gore grind bands. All of them are gore grind.
I would hope so.
Yeah. I definitely didn't think they were prog metal.
Yeah, I wasn't assuming that at all.
Thermonuclear abortion only playing 7-8 times.
Let me read them one more time
for
the audience. Thermonuclear abortion, psychiatric regurgitation, brutal sphincter, or awaiting imminent death.
For me, it's got to be either psychiatric regurgitation or brutal sphincter because those are the only ones that almost makes sense.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to go B, psychiatric regurgitation.
Okay, Dave. Winning imminent death because...
Which one of those bands was not on tour?
It's right. It's happening right now, so why would you wait for it?
Mm.
A little more subtle than the other ones. That's a good splash with your tongue.
I'm going to go...
Tough one.
Brutal sphincter.
Brutal sphincter. Sid?
Mm. I too will say brutal sphincter.
Well, guys, for the
Wait.
No.
Unless I just get a freebie.
You don't get a freebie.
Yeah.
I thought Noah went first. Sorry.
Mm. I chose the category, but it's okay.
You're right.
Great.
No, you're right. I defer to your
I feel
choice.
Like I've seen thermonuclear abortion in Nick's CD booklet.
Okay.
I'm also kind of torn between brutal sphincter and psychiatric regurgitation. So I'm trying to think of, like, what vocabulary would a grind band use? And I feel like brutal sphincter is the one that they would choose. So the fake one is psychiatric regurgitation.
Okay, guys. Well, for the first time today, nobody scores at all. The
wow.
fake band is awaiting imminent death.
Wow.
Grind, and I'm like, that doesn't sound like a core grind name.
Good reasoning. But
I was thinking that one, but then you sort of went into extra detail about it, and
right.
I felt like you wouldn't call attention to the one you made up. So you,
reverse psychology.
Yeah, son of a bitch.
Yep. All right.
So now I know your games.
Now it's on Rob's turn to pick a category. We have Cry Me a River. Star Power.
Is that Cry Me a River?
No,
that's a good question.
That
good question. No, Crime.
Okay.
And it's
I thought it was just
only,
some Russian category.
Yeah, only Eastern European bands.
Good to ask these questions. Cry Me a River, Star Power, or Who Am I?
I will do Star Power.
Star Power. Guys, these are simply bands named after celebrities. Band named after celebrities. Danny Trejo.
Uh-huh.
Alone with R. Kelly. Go to Hell, Mike Piazza.
What?
Or Mike Tyson fighting other Mike Tysons. Three of these are real.
Let's hear them again.
One is fake. Danny Trejo, famous actor, of course. Alone with R. Kelly. Go to Hell, Mike Piazza, baseball player. or Mike Tyson fighting other Mike Tysons? Here's the list.
Dave goes first.
I'm going to go with Go to Hell, Mike Piazza.
Go to Hell, Mike Piazza. Sid.
I would say that, but you being a Met fan, it seems.